Hello once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me here on this Thursday, February 13th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. Let's go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me here as we keep pushing on through this week. Two segments, one guest on today's edition of the show. I will be doing a solo segment here with the Bettors Box, my MLB betting podcast. We'll be doing this on Thursdays here for a little while. Brad Power is taking a little bit of a leave of absence from the show, just try to re-energize and recharge those batteries a little bit. So I'll be doing some Major League Baseball stuff here on Thursdays, and I'll start with that here on today's show. I'll be piggybacking off of yesterday's Pecota discussion with Brian Leonard, give you some thoughts on some of the spring training injuries that have popped up, then also take a look at this Houston Astros situation, which seems to be getting worse before it gets better. Second half of today's show, John Ryan, professional handicapper at John Ryan Sports and the number one on Twitter, will join me. He's a regular contributor to bangthebook.com, talking NBA buy and sell. We also do Big East and Big Ten with him over at the website. As far as today's segment goes, well, we'll talk a bit about the two games tonight on Thursday night in the NBA just before the All-Star break. Then we'll take a look this weekend at the Big Ten and the Big East. Over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Tons of great stuff, great cast of writers. Got previews up for the NASCAR duels tonight, preview up for the Daytona 500, preview up for this weekend's UFC event, preview up for XFL Week 2. We also have daily NBA, NHL, college basketball. We've got soccer, golf, tennis, tons of stuff going on over at the website. Please make sure you check it all out. And of course, you're going to be rolling out my MLB season win total stuff, my MLB season preview stuff, team futures, player futures, all that kind of thing. That's going to be rolling out next week. The MLB betting guide will come out next week as well. You'll have the individual team previews on the pages over at bangthebook.com. We'll also be putting together a PDF for you, so you'll have it all in one place. You could download that, read that on any one of your devices. We'll probably get a PDF up on Amazon as well for your Kindle. So really looking forward to that. I've got two first drafts left to write, then the editing process for those, and of course, doing the team, division, pennant, and individual player futures shortly thereafter. So a lot of information coming your way in that 2020 MLB betting guide. Very proud of the work that I put into it. Hopefully you'll enjoy it as much as I enjoy doing it for you. Actually, hopefully you enjoy it more than I enjoy doing it for you. But in any event, that will be rolling out here next week over at bangthebook.com. Finally, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio, presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook, BTB, and the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook, 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. Real quickly here, before I dig into the Major League Baseball stuff, like I said, we won't be having Brad Powers, at least this week, probably for a few more weeks here at a minimum on our Thursday editions of the show. But I do want to tell you that once we get into the month of March, the month of madness, as I like to call it, with conference tournaments, with March Madness, and you know, obviously the first 4 days of March Madness, certainly the most interesting and most exciting, we'll probably go to Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday shows in the month of March. What that means is that we'll condense our guests a little bit. Some of our Thursday, Friday segments we'll move into Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday. So I'll do that as it fits, as it's convenient for our guests on the show. But we'll probably just be doing Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday segments and shows. And those probably will end up being a little bit longer than our traditional shows. Because, like I said, I mean, Thursday, Friday, big days for college basketball. A lot of conference tournaments start Wednesday, Thursday. And obviously, you've got that first week of March Madness that goes Thursday, Friday. And then, of course, the following Thursday, Friday. So just want to give you a heads up about that. Obviously, it's still a little bit into the future here. But again, for the month of March, probably looking to go Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, just about each week. I'm not sure about the first week of the month because we don't have a ton of conference tournaments to worry about early on in the process. But probably that second week of March, or I guess we call it that first full week of March. We'll probably be going to the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday format. I may do a Bettors Box on Thursdays to get you ready for the Major League Baseball season, which starts on March 26th. But just a heads up, a programming note for you here, and obviously I'll remind you of that as it gets closer. All right, so we talked some Major League Baseball here. We did that on yesterday's show as well with Brian Leonard. And you know what? Quite frankly here, as we look back at this week on Bang the Book Radio so far, a lot of stuff with long-term, longer-ranging impact. You know, on Tuesdays with Brian Blessing, we talk NASCAR. We talk golf. There's some good value to that a couple days after the show. Same thing with Wednesdays. We talk XFL and golf with Wes Reynolds. We're talking baseball with Brian Leonard. On Mondays, we do college basketball with Kyle Hunter and trying to take more of a week-long view at things. So a good shelf life to a lot of this stuff on Bang the Book Radio these days. So hopefully you've been taking advantage of that. But obviously this Major League Baseball stuff going to have a long shelf life, to say the least here. And I do want to focus a little bit more on the Pecota discussion that we kind of tapped into a little bit on Wednesday with Brian Leonard. And just a reminder that these Pecota projections coming from Baseball Prospectus are the results of a lot of simulations, a lot of individual player projections that go into the hopper, into the formula, a lot of advanced metrics, a lot of proprietary stuff that Baseball Prospectus has, either behind the paywall or just completely behind the scenes. They put all this stuff together and run these simulations. And then what they do is that they publish the standings for the average of all the simulations for each one of these teams. Now, of course, as we know, averages are just that. You know, it's an average of all the different findings that you get. So these teams may go higher or may go lower. So what do these Pecota projections mean for me? If you're out there trying to handicap season win totals, how should I be evaluating these things? How should I be looking at these things? Well, something that's really cool over at Baseball Prospectus, on the page with the Pecota standings, you can see the distribution of the simulated wins, the distribution of the records. That is what has value to me. I don't care what the average is. I do not care at all whatsoever what Pecota comes up with as an average. What matters to me is the range of outcomes, because that's always my goal with season win totals. It should be your goal across any season win total market. What is the range of outcomes? What is the ceiling and what is the floor? Now, what the Pecota projections are going to do is that they're going to create this ceiling and this floor for you. And then obviously the most popular results will kind of be clustered in there. Well, what's nice is that over on the Pecota standings page, you can see that distribution. You can see where those peaks are. You can see kind of where the starting point and the end point is for each respective team. So as we take a look around here, you know, you see a team like the Tampa Bay Rays, where they don't come to a point. They don't have kind of that bell curve format that a lot of these teams have. They kind of go up and then flatten out and then come back down. So what that tells me is that Tampa Bay has a wide range of outcomes, because there's not one predominant number or one predominant range within the greater range. You get a team like Baltimore, for example, right around 62, 63 wins, you see it come to a point. It's very bell curve-like with Baltimore. So what does that tell me? Well, Baltimore's not going to be very good, which we already knew, but that Pecota, in most of their simulations, projects them for about 100 losses, projects them for about 62 or 63 wins, which I still think is actually too high. I'll talk more about that in a second. But you have a very well-defined range of likely outcomes based on the Pecota simulations. As a general rule, and I mentioned this before and I mentioned this yesterday, I generally don't like playing season win totals that are too high or too low. Last year, the Marlins were an exception. Last year, I played the Marlins under 63.5. That one came through for us, but that was by and large because of the other four teams in that division, the 76 head-to-head games that the Marlins had to play. The thing is, the Marlins, over most of the first half, were actually on pace to fall right around their season win total line. So you do still need a lot of things to go right or a lot of things to go wrong with these extremes of the win total betting odds market. So that was a scary one for me. I wound up playing it. It did win. But by and large, I don't play a lot of high season win totals, and I don't play a whole lot of low season win totals. Why? Let's look at the New York Yankees. You look at their distribution curve for those Pecota projections, and for the most part, they're winning 100 or more games in the majority of those simulations. So there's not a whole lot of margin for error with a team like the Yankees. They're deep. They're talented. Their offense is very, very good. They signed Gerrit Cole. They upgraded the pitching staff. So for the Yankees here, I just don't see a wide range of outcomes. I see a very high floor and a capped ceiling. Why is the ceiling capped? Well, because you play 162 games. There's only so many of them that you can win, and you're going to lose some. You're going to play some of the better teams around the league. You'll probably go 500 against the elite of the elite. Well, maybe that makes up 30 or 40 losses for you. If that's the case, well, then what's the point in taking a high season win total where you may need a team to win you 110 games to feel really confident, you know, with that pick that you've made? So it's one of those scenarios where I really do tend to focus on the teams that have a wide range of outcomes. So who are some of those teams? Well, like I mentioned, Tampa Bay, they've really flattened out. There's not a high peak to their curve. They flatten out. So that's a team that Pecota has a wide range of outcomes for. The Cleveland Indians are another one. Now, their biggest peak was in the 86 range, but there's another spike around 91 to 92 wins, which would put them up with the Minnesota Twins. Now, I do think that the Indians have a relatively wide range of outcomes. They've got a pretty high floor because they've got an elite starting rotation and two of the best position players in baseball in Francisco Lindor and Jose Ramirez. So they've got a high floor. But their peak is very different because you've got a team that does have a lackluster offense. They were a league average offense last year. Now, the pitching staff on the whole probably winds up being about the same as last season's. They won 93 games last year. But if that offense takes a step back or they run into injuries once again, yeah, they could finish in that 86 range. But you've also got that spike at 91 or 92 wins where maybe their bullpen does hold it together. Maybe their lineup is a little bit better than anticipated, particularly with a guy like Lindor and a guy like Ramirez who battled injuries most of last season. So you see Cleveland with that higher projection at 91 or 92 wins on that distribution of these simulated outcomes. So what that tells me is that Cleveland is a team that has a higher ceiling and a higher floor. So those are the types of win totals that I'm looking to play. You've got the White Sox. They have a very wide range of outcomes as well. The top of their curve is very, very flat. So what that means is that there are a lot of different ways that this season could go, and the simulations said as much. So when I look at a team like the White Sox, and I look and, you know, their average was around 83 wins, to me, I think their ceiling is 85 or 86 wins. I don't see enough going right for them that they wind up being a team with a 15 plus win improvement off of last year's results. So because they've got this large range of outcomes to me, that's a team I want to try to attack. That's a team where I feel like I've got the right level of variance to make a concrete decision, because that's what I'm looking to do. I'm looking to prey when it comes to the season win total market on uncertainty. I'm looking to prey on variance. Because I think with the way that I analyze and evaluate Major League Baseball, I can do a good job projecting these players, projecting these teams, kind of looking at these situations for these respective teams, and then using that high variance environment to my advantage. Because the books are going to put up a number that they think balances action as much as possible. I may not agree with that number. I may not agree with the projections that are out there. So I'm going to fire on those teams. And the White Sox here, a team with a large range of outcomes, it makes sense to me to focus in a little bit more on them. San Diego in the National League West is another one of those teams with a very wide range of outcomes. If you look at their distribution, again, there's no peak, there's no apex to their bell curve. It's pretty flat for the most part. So that's a team that could win 90 games. That's a team that could be the National League wild card. That's also, to me, a team that could win 75 games. So when I get a big range, those are the teams I want to focus in on very closely, because I think those are the teams where you get more season win total value. I talked about on yesterday's segment with Brian Leonard that, you know, the St. Louis Cardinals almost annually perform near their projections. They are very, very consistent. They're very close to their season win total. They're very close to their Pecota numbers. They're very consistent. That's just their MO as an organization. Well, this year, Pecona comes out very, very low with their projections, projecting them to be around a 500 team. And they've got a pretty high season win total in the upper 80s. Is that a team that I want to attack because Pecona says something different? Not necessarily, because you've got a chronic overachiever in the St. Louis Cardinals that no matter what their projections look like, they perform up to a certain level almost every single year. Maybe it's consistency. Maybe it's overachieving. Maybe it's just sustainability, whatever you want to call it. But that's a team that even though their Pecota projection is very low, I need it proven to me. I need to see them go out there and have a really bad season. You look at the National League Central, and the Reds actually have the highest average projection per Pecota. The Reds would be their Central Division winner. But as you look a little bit closer at the distribution of those outcomes, the peak for the Cubs is actually higher than the tallest peak for the Reds. And I love the Reds this season, but that's very interesting, especially with what we saw with the Cubs projections here in recent years. So again, I don't take these Pecota standings numbers to mean anything. I'm looking for variance. I'm looking for that wide range of outcomes. I'm looking for the opportunity to get a greater edge. There is no edge to me in playing the Dodgers over 103 wins because they're going to be very, very good. And they could be very, very good and still fall short of 103 wins. I don't want to bet on a team where I'm trying to figure out the degree to which they'll be really good or the degree to which they'll be really bad. Because I just don't see a great edge in that department. The edges that I see are with these teams in the middle, with these teams generally in that 75 to 85 win range where there are a lot of things that could go right and they could wind up having a magical season. There are a lot of things that could go wrong and they could completely bottom out. But in a lot of cases, it's going to be some of both. Some things will go right, some things will go wrong. And what I want to try to figure out is which end of the spectrum they're most likely to fall on. And at that point in time, I take that season win total and I'll play it over or I'll play it under. So what Pecota essentially does for me is it reinforces my thought process on the teams that I think have a wide range of outcomes. And that's what I'm looking at. I do not care that it says the Phillies are going to win 78 games. I do not care that it says that the Yankees are going to win 103 or whatever it says. I don't care. I want to see what the range is because you're going to have a much higher confidence level in saying, yeah, the Dodgers are going to win 105 games than you are in saying, well, the Angels are going to win 86 or 85. Because the Angels, as much as their improvements help with guys like Rendon and, you know, Justin Upton being back and some of their pitching enhancements, that's still a team that has fallen well short of projections several years in a row. So these are all things that you can factor into the equation. These are all things that I kind of take a look at here from a Major League Baseball standpoint. And this is probably a good time to remind the listeners out there that when I do the Bettors Box every Monday and Thursday over the course of the baseball season, I do make my notes available to the listeners if they're interested. I had a sheet of about 200 people that were on the mailing list for the segment notes last year. If you want to get on that list, adam@bangthebook.com. Send me an email. Tell me you want to be on the list for the Bettors Box notes. I talk about a lot of numbers, a lot of analytics, a lot of advanced concepts, things of that sort. And sometimes it can be a little bit difficult to follow along. So that's why I make my notes available to anybody that wants them. Again, adam@bangthebook.com. And like I said, I'll probably be doing some of these Bettors Box segments on Thursdays as we go through March Madness and the month of March. But, you know, primarily, we'll be doing them here during the Major League Baseball season, which, of course, as we know, begins on March 26th. I mentioned some injury stuff yesterday in the segment with Brian Leonard. I just want to circle back to that a little bit here more, just because we've got a couple new injuries. I just want to talk about how I analyze them here in spring training. Yesterday on the show, we mentioned Nicole Hamels' injury. He'll be reevaluated in 3 weeks. They announced yesterday that he will not be ready for opening day. Had a similar issue last season with that shoulder, but you have to understand here that some injury situations are much worse than others. And obviously I know that goes without saying, but I'm not just talking about the name recognition of the injured player. And Cole Hamels is obviously a big name. But how much does that hurt the Braves if he misses 4, 5, 6 starts, something like that? To me, I don't think it's that much. Because the Braves have a ton of pitching depth. A lot of guys on the fringes in AAA, a Bryce Wilson, a Tuki Toussaint. You got a lot of guys in Ian Anderson. A lot of guys that are kind of in that mix anyway. So over the course of a full season, would Cole Hamels be better than those guys? Maybe. It's certainly possible. Over 6, 7, 8 starts, how much better would Cole Hamels be than those guys? In my estimation, probably not a lot. So you hear this big news of, oh my God, Cole Hamels isn't going to be ready for opening day. It's a bummer. It's a bummer for him. It's a bummer for the Braves, who put out good money to sign him for one season. But I don't think the tangible impact is going to be that high. Now, you contrast that with a different situation like James Paxton with the Yankees. James Paxton cleared to throw here in about 4 to 6 weeks, puts him in about mid to late March. So, excuse me. So he's going to wind up missing most of spring training, if not all of spring training. So I put him at another 2 months probably, because he's got to go through the spring training type workload, building his arm up, throwing sim games, throwing rehab starts in the minor leagues. You're probably looking at late May, early June at the earliest for James Paxton. Now, in a vacuum, James Paxton's not that big of a deal because you signed Garrett Cole and you've got some guys like a Davey Garcia, like a Jonathan Loaisiga, somebody like that, that could step up. But remember, Domingo Germán is suspended. So now the Yankees are down 2 starters and they get Garrett Cole and they get Luis Severino back, which is obviously a tremendous help for them. But you're talking about probably missing somewhere in the range of 25 starts from James Paxton and Domingo Germán. That's a lot different than missing 6 starts from Cole Hamels. So does it impact the Yankees' chances of winning the division? Probably not that much. Does it impact my desire to play a season win total over 100? Absolutely. Because what happens is it lowers the ceiling for that team. They can out-hit anybody they want, and they've got an elite bullpen, and we may end up seeing the opener concept from them early on in the year, missing the 2 starters here and probably trying to take it easy with Severino. But they're still going to win a lot of games. So does it take me to a bet on the under? No. But it doesn't take me to a bet on the over, obviously, either. So it makes it an easy stay away for me. And that's what can happen here with these injuries that pop up in spring training. Now, a lot of injuries are going to be soft tissue type things. Gio Gonzalez, Yasmani Grandal, Lucas Giolito, all these guys for the White Sox dealing with some soft tissue stuff. The one that worries me is Gio Gonzalez, because he's the older guy. He's a guy that, you know, got off to a late start last season. He went through spring training with the Yankees, didn't get signed for a while, wound up getting signed by the Brewers. But you wonder how he holds up for the full season. Now, Gio Gonzalez is nothing special. He's a, you know, league average, maybe slightly better type of pitcher. But for the White Sox, who don't have good pitching depth, that's a bigger deal to them than it would be to, say, the Indians or the Braves, somebody like that. So Gonzalez is what I'm watching closely, simply because I think his innings are going to be better than the innings of anybody that replaces him. Now, to what degree? Well, that's the question. If he gets replaced by Michael Kopech, it's a little bit different. If Michael Kopech is brought along slowly coming back from Tommy John and it winds up being somebody else, well, that's a different discussion altogether. So that's why you follow along with these injuries. It's not just the name recognition of the guys that are hurt. It's the guys that are replacing them as well that you really need to take a longer look at. One more set of non-injury news, I guess I would say, here out of spring training. No innings limits for Jesus Luzardo and AJ Puk for the Oakland A's. Now, this is important because Daniel Mengden just had arthroscopic surgery on his elbow. He's going to be brought along slowly here throughout spring training. Not that he's great by any means, but Oakland already has a thin starting rotation. They need upside. They need depth. Luzardo and Puk can provide both. Now, of course, those are two guys that have dealt with some major injuries as well, so obviously some concerns there. But the fact that they're not going to be shackled by any innings restrictions improves Oakland's projection to me, because this starting rotation is the primary concern for the A's. They do get Sean Manaea back, who missed almost all of last season. They do still have Mike Fiers with his great home splits. But Lizardo's the upside guy. I think Puck is a guy that can be pretty good, too. So that alters the projection for me for Oakland. Now, of course, we'll see if these guys get through spring training healthy. But all of this goes into the equation for me. All of this is part of the process during spring training in terms of how I evaluate and how I look at these injury situations. So I know, obviously, you're probably not thinking too much baseball right now with basketball still going on, a lot of college basketball, stuff like that. But just try not to lose sight of some of these injury situations that pop up in spring training, because a lot of teams will downplay these, and the beat writers by proxy will downplay them as well. You know, because it's going to be, he's just being brought along a little bit slowly in camp. Well, being brought along slowly sometimes becomes not pitching in Cactus League games for 2 or 3 weeks, which then becomes not ready for opening day, which then becomes something that kind of throws everything out of whack for somebody who's used to preparing for the season. So again, obviously I don't expect everyone to be diving into Major League Baseball the way that I am, but just something you want to keep on the back burner here, kind of want to keep in mind. One last thing to discuss here is this Houston Astros situation. Like I said at the top of the show, this just keeps getting worse before it gets better. Just blatant defiance from the players. Jim Crane, obviously just completely delusional with the comments that he made during this sham of a press conference on Thursday. And, you know, the players were a little bit more candid once they got back in the locker room and they weren't propped up in front of the media reading prepared statements and this and that. But initially I thought to myself, okay, this is going to be an us against the world situation. This is going to be the Astros players rallying together, a big middle finger to everybody else. You know what? We're just going to prove that we can win without doing what we were doing. We're going to prove we can win the World Series without stealing signs, without any of this scrutiny, without this, you know, dark shadow, this dark cloud, anything like that. But the more this goes along, the more I wonder, the more I'm not sold on the Houston Astros. First of all, they're going to get everybody's best shot. You know, they're going to have pissed off players from around the league giving them their best shots day in and day out. Now, of course, they did lose Garrett Cole. That certainly made the pitching staff a little bit weaker. You do wonder, of course, too, about the players taking punishment into their own hands, because nobody was impressed with what Rob Manfred did. You know, gets AJ Hinch removed, gets Jeff Luhnow removed. You know, they had the $5 million fine. They lost some draft picks, this and that. But the players that participated in this, the players that knew about it, didn't stop it. By all accounts, didn't really seem to do anything about it. And why would you? You know, until you get caught, who cares, right? Well, the players and their reactions to this are not going over well in the court of public opinion and across Major League Baseball. So Rob Manfred, who is not doing a good job at all whatsoever as commissioner, he may have to step up here. He may have to grow a pair and actually put down some legitimate discipline against Jim Crane, against the Astros players. Now, I don't know if this happens, but the more these guys talk about this and the more that they keep answering questions in such a defiant and haphazard and unconcerned way, just opens them up for more scrutiny. If I'm the Astros, I just shut up. I just let people say whatever. But right now, they're inviting the possibility that Manfred and Major League Baseball come back in on this and actually enforce some punishments against the on-field personnel. I don't know if this happens. I'm just kind of spitballing here. But the more they talk about this, the worse this gets. And, you know, they hired Dusty Baker to be a shield for the players, to kind of protect the players. They know that this isn't over. And they just keep, you know, doing things in such a manner that I don't understand from a player level, from an organizational level. So this Astros situation here, I thought it would be an us against the world mentality. Now I don't know. Now I'm not sure. There may be finger pointing. There may be the assignment of blame. There may be punishments. This may just be a team that, you know what, you're standing in the batter's box and you're ducking because you know 95 is coming at your head. And I don't know. I mean, this is such a unique situation. We've never seen this before in the betting era of Major League Baseball. I mean, this is the steroid era on steroids. And I understand that it involves only one team as opposed to players from around the league. But, I mean, this is crazy. And I don't know how I'm going to handle this team. I don't know how I'm going to handle this team from a season win total standpoint. I don't know what I would do from a division standpoint. Because the tough thing is, they're still the best team in the AL West. They're the most talented team in that division and quite possibly the most talented team in the American League. They're still very, very good, a very high upside. But man, this situation just keeps getting worse. And if Major League Baseball decides to move forward and step in now, as maybe Rob Manfred should, just to kind of put his foot down a little bit, what kind of impact does that have? I don't know. It remains to be seen, but it's definitely something that I'll be keeping an eye on here as we get closer to the 2020 Major League Baseball season. So once again, I'll be doing these Bettors Box segments probably on Monday and Thursday as we go forward here a little bit. And then, of course, on Mondays and Thursdays once we get into the Major League Baseball season. We got one more guest, one more segment here on this February 13th edition of the show. That is with John Ryan at John Ryan Sports and the number one on Twitter, contributor to bangthebook.com. John, how's it going today, man?
I'm doing well, Adam. How about yourself?
Doing very well, buddy. Appreciate your time as always here, sir. Thank you so much for joining me. And we'll start in the NBA here today, I guess. We got two games tonight, Clippers-Boston, Oklahoma City, and New Orleans. And then it's the All-Star break. So anything on your mind for tonight's two games that you want to touch on here today?
It'll be interesting to see how the Clippers respond to the game they played in Philly. And, you know, in past shows that I've done with you, everyone knows that I've been bullish on the Sixers. And that actually was a 10-star play for the clients, which made it even better. But that watching that game, that was a very physical game. And it had a playoff feel to it. It almost had like a game seven feel to it. If the Sixers came away with a huge win, they finally got Embiid to learn what the difference was between the three-point line and the paint. And they really played their best game of the year by far. So the Clippers have had a day off here to recoup from that. And now they're in Boston. And, you know, Boston's not going to be an easy game for the Clippers to win either. So I wouldn't be surprised here if the Clippers kind of limp into the All-Star break with another loss tonight.
And that's always such an interesting thing, too. You know, we talk about scheduling spots, we talk about situational spots, all the different things, letdowns, look-aheads, so on and so forth. But you know, that's something that I think doesn't maybe get enough run out there, is that when you play a tough physical game, it can be very hard to bounce back in that second one. And the Clippers definitely in that spot here. And especially too, you know, you get some of these games where I think sometimes these mean more to one team than another. And I think this is a situation where maybe this game means more to Boston just because the Clippers know they've got Kawhi Leonard. They know they're going to be there in that Western Conference picture. But for a team like Boston here, you know, maybe there's just a little bit more incentive to go into the All-Star break with a win over a really good team in a potential NBA Finals playoff preview, something like that. You know, there's also those types of things here too.
Yeah, I agree with that, Adam. You know, Boston's coming off a loss at the Rockets in a game they didn't play all that well. They shot 43.5% from the field. But, you know, Boston's defense is another one sort of like the Sixers, but I have the Sixers as one of the top three defenses in the NBA. But over the last several games, there's several of them that Boston held opponents to under 40% shooting. And that's rather remarkable. And I think they match up well against the Clippers. And as long as you keep Leonard under wraps and don't let him go off for 40, you have a chance to beat them. So they have they've had a day of rest, too, coming back from Houston. And I just think that Boston will shoot better from the field, and they'll have the better assist to turnover ratio than the Clippers. And if they combine those two, their percentages of winning against the spread are very high.
Well, and I think it's always so interesting too, especially the last game before the All-Star break, because you sort of wonder, you know, what the mindset is of these teams. And one thing I do have a little bit of a concern about is that Boston hasn't had consecutive days off since basically the first of the year. So you do wonder if maybe they look ahead a little bit to some downtime, but of course, you've got players going to the All-Star game. You've got guys, you know, maybe don't want to go home. Maybe they've got, you know, situations where there's just not much going on, or you know, they'd rather be out with the boys. you know, it's always interesting that last game right before the break to try and ascertain what a team's mentality is. I think it's really illustrative in this second game here between the Thunder and the Pelicans, because the Thunder are making, or the Pelicans are making that push now. They get Zion Williamson. They've won three in a row. They're trying to make up for lost time and get back into that playoff hunt. Whereas for Oklahoma City, they know they're going to make the playoffs. They have lost a couple in a row. Certainly they don't want to go into the break on a three-game losing streak, but they're going to make the playoffs. They're going to be a 6 or 7 seed in all likelihood. New Orleans is a little bit more of a desperate team tonight, and maybe we're kind of seeing that with this line move up a little bit.
Yeah, that's I agree with that, Adam. There's no question the bigger money is on the Pelicans at this point in time, and we're talking at about noon. So I wouldn't be surprised if this line did go to 2.5. The Oklahoma City Thunder are a pretty dangerous team, though, and I agree 100% with your point on Zion Williamson. And he's the X factor for sure in this game. But OKC being on the road and only 2.5 kind of makes me want to lean on Oklahoma City. I would have thought this morning I would have seen the Pelicans at 3.5, possibly 4, given what you said. So the sentiment, the price tag here is making me shake my head a little bit and wonder, like, why isn't the Pelicans favored by 4? And, you know, we're only talking about 1 or 2 points, but as you know, home court is worth whatever, 2.5, 3, 3.5. Some courts are worth 4 in the NBA. So they're basically saying that Oklahoma City and the Pelicans are even teams, but you would think that the Pelicans are a better team with Zion Williamson on the court than they were before, and they should be priced a little bit higher. So, you know, it's that contrarian part of my thinking that I'm caught up with on this game and makes me want to lean on Oklahoma City a little bit.
So 26 teams already enjoying the start of the All-Star break here, because we've only got these two games tonight. So, John, what do you do during the NBA All-Star break as far as NBA goes? I mean, are you tweaking your numbers? Are you kind of, you know, maybe looking for some things you want to do outside of the break? Or do you just kind of set it aside and, you know, maybe either take a break or focus on something else?
Well, regarding the numbers and the data, I just have a quick algorithm I run to identify the top 5 ATS wins I've had and the worst 5, just to isolate them out so that I can look at them and figure out, well, why was that play so good? Why was that play so bad? And then at the end of the season, that combines with the second half, and then I can do the tweaks then. But mainly I look at the Major League Baseball totals, the win totals. And your passion for baseball is second to none. So I'm sure you're looking at them too. But I was thinking that I was hoping that there's going to be a line for Houston missing the playoffs. And I think I'd be all over that. Tongue in cheek here, of course. But hey, the news from them is just dreadful. And I don't know how they're going to be penalized for all this. But maybe being banned from the playoffs is one of the options. So who knows?
Yeah, that's something I talked about in my previous segment is, you know, initially my thoughts with Houston were, you know what, I probably want to buy this team because I think that there's going to be, you know, that us against the world mentality. They're going to kind of band together a little bit. But the more this thing drags on, the more I think the finger pointing's kind of starting a little bit. You know, they're trying their best from a PR standpoint to blame this on everybody else. They're blaming it on Luhnow. They're blaming it on Hinch. They're blaming it on Cora and Beltran. All the guys that are no longer with the organization, there hasn't been a whole heck of a lot of personal accountability here. And I just sort of wonder what that dynamic is sort of doing to this team. And furthermore, we know that they're going to get everybody's best shot now over the course of the regular season. And, you know, some guys are going to throw at them. There could be suspensions. There could be players that get hurt from pitchers kind of taking things into their own hands. And also, too, like I mentioned in the previous segment, the more this drags on, the more that the Astros and the organization bring attention to this, and the more that people kind of go after Rob Manfred for what I think was a pretty weak stance on everything that happened, supplemental discipline is a possibility. The more that this keeps going, as people kind of question, you know, does Manfred kind of have a handle on this league? So I don't really know what I want to do here with Houston, but the more this drags on, the more you see quotes from players around the league, and the more you see other teams kind of taking a stance at this, the more I think it hurts Houston overall.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I'll quickly say the Wall Street Journal, I believe it was yesterday, had a great article about how this permeated the whole organization. It's not like in the steroid days where it was players identified as cheating. It wasn't the whole entire roster, at least not that we know of. This, I think everybody that worked for the Astros must have known, because it started with an Excel spreadsheet done by an intern that turned into a PowerPoint presentation that was taken to the GM, and he acted on it. So when I read that, I was like, oh my God, I mean, what the heck are these guys doing? And then the owner came out today and said that in no way, shape, or form did the cheating impact the 2017 World Series championship. So, you know, you were saying about they're trying to posture themselves, say the politically correct things. That's not politically correct, at least from the way I read it. And the accountability, I kind of said tongue-in-cheek, too, since Excel and PowerPoint are made by Microsoft. Maybe they're the blame for all this cheating happening, because maybe the spreadsheet wouldn't have been done if Excel didn't exist. But I'm just kidding, of course. But it just blows my mind.
It really does. And you know, that's the thing here, you know, not to hijack this segment completely from talking about basketball. But, you know, that's the thing. I mean, you get the All-Star break now, and – you know, in the past, it would have been something like, oh, cool. You know, I get a little bit of a break here. You know, it's just one less thing I have to worry about. But now with this 365-day-a-year sports betting calendar, you don't get a break. You transition your time from the NBA to Major League Baseball. Or I'm sure some people may start to look at some college football stuff or something like that. Or just, you know, focus more on college basketball, as we're going to do here on the next part of this segment. But that's just it, man. You know, there's no downtime. There's always a different market to study.
Yeah, I agree. It just reminds me of my Wall Street days where, you know, you can take the afternoon off on a Saturday after you get all the plays out. And I really don't watch too many games. I watch the condensed versions of them. But I take that time then to, you know, kind of balance myself. But you're right. I mean, every single day, 7 days a week, doesn't matter if it's Sunday. You know, if you choose to say, well, I'm not going to work on Sunday, you're pretty much not going to be as good as you could have been in the world of betting. Because betting to me is like trading. You know, if I short the S&P 500 today, it's the same thing as betting on the Clippers tonight. And that's I kind of like it this way, though, that you don't get the break, because you don't really you go on a vacation traditionally, and then you have to almost have a vacation from the vacation to get back into your corporate world. So that part of the vacation land, I don't miss.
It's just, it's tough because, you know, I mean, the hardest part about all of this for me, and obviously I've been grinding in this business for a long time, you know, in terms of content creation, and a lot of the guests I have on the show have been grinding in terms of, you know, handicapping and putting out selections for much longer than I've been in the business. But it's one of those things where, you know, I would love to take a day off. I would love to just isolate myself from anything sports related for a 24-hour period. But you've got, you know, it's basically FOMO. It's fear of missing out on something that, you know, maybe costs you a bet down the line. You know, it's like you almost always have to be vigilant. And I think it's so tough to try and find that balance of, you know, healthily following all this stuff, but also taking some time for yourself. And, you know, with something like the NBA All-Star break, like I said, now it's just, you know, well, do I do more college basketball because, you know, there's a lot of games and conference tournaments are coming up and March Madness is coming. Do I focus on baseball because, well, you know, that's the next thing that comes up. You got to try to find some kind of healthy balance here. And I think with so much going on, maybe the NBA All-Star break is not the time to do it. Maybe you try to do it over the summer, but something for our listeners out there to really understand. And, you know, if you're somebody who wants to, if you have aspirations to be in this business full time, you got to try and find that healthy balance. You got to try and find something that allows you to have a life outside of sports betting while still trying to keep up on everything that you possibly can. And, you know, hey, if taking a break here this weekend, because it's the NBA All-Star break, is your time, by all means, go ahead and do it.
Yeah, I agree. The balance is very key because you'll burn out. That's an absolute fact. that if you don't take time for yourself, and like for example, in my life, I do two hikes a day with my Red Fox Lab Manny, and you know, you don't realize how valuable that is, because then I come back from that and I'm completely refreshed mentally, and I'm able to get back at it. So it's stuff like that too, that's not related to sports, and you just kind of go do something that, you know, is good for you. You know, you going to a bar and having six pints of beer is not getting away from your work. You know, it's, although that's fun to do too.
My age now, at this time, six pints of beer is work for me. It never used to be, but I'm definitely getting to that point here where it's not just work for that day. It's kind of work for the next day too. But in any event, we transition over to the college basketball side of things here, as of course, you know, that's a sports market that doesn't really stop once the season actually gets going, except for right around the holidays. We do have one game in the Big Ten tonight that I want to pick your brain about a little bit. Iowa and Indiana. Indiana, a 2-point home favorite here in this one. As we know, the Big Ten's been a very, you know, home road dichotomy type of conference here this season. What do you think about this one tonight, John?
Well, looking at the summaries for this game, these teams are almost identical. Iowa is the one of the best offenses in the country and one of the best in the Big Ten. They play a weaker form of defense, but that kind of is minimized when you look at statistics based on every 100 possessions, which kind of minimizes the teams that like to play fast versus the methodical teams that like to play through the mud. So Indiana does have a much better defense, but Iowa has, you know, Garza. You know, and that offense feeds through him. There's no debating that. I do have a lean on Iowa in this game for tonight. That will be actually an official call. It would be a 7-star play on Iowa. And I give out 5-star, 7-star, 7-star, and 10-star. There's nothing real fancy about that, but 7-star is your normal size bet. 10-star is recommended 35% higher than a 7, and 5-star is 35% lower, and you should never bet more than 7% of your bankroll. And those are the rules. At least the rules that I think are pretty good that are supporting a disciplined way of doing this. But anyway, Iowa, they're 17-7. Indiana's 15-8. These are two teams that I think will be in the tournament, and the Big Ten could have as many as 10. It's by far the best tournament in the country, bar none.
So as we look at Indiana here, they've lost 4 straight games. The first one to Maryland, they lost by a point at home, 15-point loss to Penn State, not super competitive against Ohio State in that road loss in Columbus on Saturday, and then lost by 12 at home to Purdue on Saturday. So you've got an Indiana team here that, you know, trending in the wrong direction. You've got an Iowa team outside of that blowout loss to Purdue a little over a week ago. They've been pretty good, pretty consistent. I think that's the thing you kind of look for right now in the Big Ten is, you know, yeah, you've got teams that have a lot of losses in conference play because this conference, as you mentioned, is very, very good. But you try to find the teams that are consistently good where maybe their losses are okay. Indiana's just not that team right now.
That's right. That's a great point. I can remember earlier in my career where I would look for winning record teams that have lost to the spread 3 or more times consecutively, thinking that I'm picking the team that's going to revert back to the mean. And I was dreadfully wrong. Not all the time, but when you start realizing that method is only hitting like 45%, you kind of throw it in the trash. But you're right that Indiana's lost all 4 of those games to the spread. And some of them by a decent amount. They scored 49 at Penn State. And we all know I've been on Penn State for, I feel like, the whole season. And then they played better against Ohio State, but also failed on the road as 7.5-point dogs. And then the offense, again, 62 points at home playing Purdue. And that was when Bobby Knight came back for the first time in 20 years. So, I would have thought that Indiana would have really played well in that matchup just with that event going on. But they didn't. So that's a team that you definitely don't look at and say, oh, boy, I'm bottom picking now. I got a good buy here. And you just don't do it. I'd rather lose money on Iowa, especially with their offense and the way they're playing, versus trying to pick a bottom with Indiana and try to look smart. I mean, that's just a waste of time and a waste of money.
So as we look at this week – go ahead.
Yeah, that's all right. I was just going to say, but on any given night, you know, Indiana could win this game. I have my models. I have my projections. And as I've talked to you, I put out what I think is going to happen, but there's no guarantee what I think is going to happen is going to happen. But over the course of a season, like in basketball, I'm hitting 62% NBA and college combined. I think our picks on Bang the Book are up there pretty well, too, for the Big East and the Big Ten. So that's what matters to me. My focus is always at the end of the season. You know, how are we doing overall? Like tonight is only one day of 365 days, as we discussed earlier. But anyway.
Well, and as we look at the Big Ten here for this weekend, seven games coming up, five of them on Saturday. Purdue and Ohio State, pretty interesting game. Illinois at Rutgers, also very interesting. Maryland at a Michigan State team that, you know, managed to beat Illinois the other night, but it wasn't exactly pretty. Wisconsin, Nebraska, Northwestern, Penn State, those are your five for Saturday. Iowa, Minnesota, Indiana, Michigan coming up here on Sunday. Any of those games on your radar for this weekend in the Big Ten?
Yeah, a lot of them are going to be, Adam. Which one should we start with here?
Whichever one you want.
Let's see. Let's take a look at Purdue and Ohio State. Now, the Big Ten, as I've said repeatedly, and I think everybody agrees, is by far the best conference this year. The interesting thing is that they've had several teams ranked this year that are not ranked now. One of them being the preseason number one Michigan State Spartans. Another one is the Ohio State Buckeyes, who were ranked as high as number two the week of December 23rd, and now are not ranked either. And it's been 4 weeks since they've been ranked. However, when I look at my composite statistics based on the team, guess who the top two teams are? Michigan State, Ohio State. Followed by Maryland, Penn State, Illinois, Rutgers, Purdue. So looking at these, the line for the Purdue-Ohio State game, which I believe is at Ohio State, right, Adam?
Yes.
I'm looking at that being Ohio State by seven. Maybe more. But I'm willing to bet that you'll see the public come in on Purdue, because the sentiment on the Buckeyes right now is horrible, because – why would you want to bet a team that was ranked second and not even ranked now? But here I think we're getting it's still the same players. It's still the same talent. And I just think that Ohio State and Michigan State are going to make runs here down the stretch to at least salvage the season.
That's an interesting point, especially because, you know, I think that at this point in time, that Ohio State line is probably going to be a little bit lower than what you make it, probably in that 4, 4.5 type of range. So looks like Ohio State may be a play here this weekend for you. And, you know, it is interesting as well to hear that you've got, you know, Michigan State and Ohio State up there as the top teams in the Big Ten, because, you know, a lot of people I've heard love Illinois. You know, they really like that Illinois defense. We'll see what they do against Rutgers and what's probably going to be a very slow-paced game here over the weekend. What about, you know, that Illinois-Rutgers game? You got any thoughts on that one?
Yeah, Illinois is the pick. I'm not sold on Rutgers at all. There was another piece I read out of the Wall Street Journal about Rutgers being good and real good. I think it was the title of the article, and I completely didn't see I saw the points the guy was making. I like reading his stuff, but I didn't agree with it. Rutgers has a team that are they're rough. They're physical players. They play like a more of a, how should I call it, a street version of pickup ball that you and I used to do back in our day. So there's been games where there's no flow to it. It's very disjointed. But it has worked to this point. But when they've played against teams like an Illinois defense is when they really struggle, because when they're not in a flow, their weaknesses are exposed and exacerbated, and they lose those games. So with, you know, Illinois, their defense, their offense here. I'm looking at the numbers now. Their offense is significantly better than Rutgers overall to this point. And this is weighted, you know, for the last most recent games mean the most. And I think a lot of times Rutgers defense gets more credit than it deserves because they play a slower pace as compared to like an Iowa or even a Penn State for that matter. So I will like Illinois in this matchup.
All right, so let's transition over to the Big East here. We'll take a look at that conference. And, you know, again, obviously a very, very strong conference to say the least. We got three games coming up here on Saturday. We got another one featuring a Big East team on Sunday. Villanova steps out of conference play to play the last game of its Big Five rivalry series against Temple. I'm sure you'll have some thoughts on that one for Sunday. But as we look at the Big East here, just overall, you know, are you surprised with how things have kind of gone here this past week?
I have, Adam. I've been kind of shocked, actually, because Villanova had their chance to be tied with Seton Hall right now. Seton Hall has had two losses here recently, and they lost against Creighton last night. Was one of our picks in the article for the Big East article on Bang the Book. I really wasn't sold on that game. In fact, I put up a tweet late in the day to cut the bet in half. Because of a trend situation that put Creighton in a 2-10 situation. I guess I panicked. You know, I tried to, you want to give the best information possible. And if I get nervous or not nervous, if I get concerned over some of the data that comes out after you write something, then I kind of feel a responsibility to, you know, keep people posted on it too. So the situation in the Big East has now become one that who's going to win this thing? Seton Hall still has control of the regular season title, but when you get in the tournament, this is going to be a free-for-all. You can name at least six teams of the 10 that have a legitimate chance to pull it off. They have four teams that are ranked in the top 25. They're the third toughest conference in the nation on my stuff. Second is the Big 12. But from top to bottom, only DePaul is not a good team. So, again, every single game is not a guaranteed win.
Well, I think it's interesting, too, especially with what we saw there from Seton Hall in Wednesday's game. We thought that that was a difficult spot for them. Coming off of beating Villanova on the road for the first time in, 26 years, I think it was. Creighton, we know that there are worries about Creighton in road games. We've talked about that before here on our segments because they're such a jump shot oriented offensive team. And they kind of got Seton Hall out of their element a little bit. That game played to 76 possessions. Seton Hall doesn't want to play games in the 80s against anybody. I know they've got Miles Powell, and if you're going to play a shootout, you don't mind having the best player on the floor. But giving up 87 points there to Creighton in what was a pretty difficult spot, I'm not going to say that this is a must win for them on Saturday against Providence, but I think they do need to bounce back. I think it would be very important for them to get that game, maybe get that lead back to three games here in conference play, because that loss to Creighton where you get some bad habits, you kind of develop some things, that's something that can kind of fester a little bit, especially when you've got several tough games left in conference play.
Yeah, that's a great point. And going to Providence is not a party for anybody. I don't think any of the teams want to play there because Providence is that type of team that, you know, can bite you in the butt. And if you're not playing at your top level, you're going to be fighting tooth and nail just to get away with the win. And I'd like your point on Seton Hall because I think the weakness is that the offense is driven through Miles Powell. If he scores 22 or more, they have a great chance of winning. But the supporting cast of Quincy McKnight, Jared Roden, of course, there's others here, Romero Gill, if they improve their game and contribute more to the scoring and take the pressure off of or the emphasis off of Powell, they're going to be much, much better for it. But to your point, that's exactly what happened in the Seton Hall loss, is they got Powell out of his element a little bit, and it transcended through the team, and they didn't respond. So now you have a blueprint on how to beat Seton Hall.
One last thing I want to ask you about here with regards to the Big East. And like I said, this game coming up here on Sunday, not a Big East game. It is Villanova taking on Temple, but you know, the conclusion of that Big Five rivalry series here in the Philadelphia area. And obviously that's something you're well-versed in, being in that part of the country. What do you think here about a game like this, where Villanova, you know, playing all these tough Big East games, they typically roll through Temple. I mean, this hasn't been all that competitive of a head-to-head rivalry the last several years, but very interesting and very difficult type of spot for Villanova.
Yeah, it's a great point. And for, you know, basketball purists out there, or just basketball fans, a lot of these games are played at an arena called the Palestra. And it's one of the most incredible. It's like being at Fenway Park in Boston by comparison. And it should be on your bucket list if you're ever in the Philadelphia area to try to go see one of those games. And of the Big Five, it doesn't matter if it's LaSalle against St. Joe's, or if, you know, Villanova and Temple has kind of been the marquee matchup over the years. But to your point, Villanova's dominated all of them. But it's just a tremendous environment to see a basketball game at the college level. But in this game, I think Villanova will win easily. And I haven't looked at the numbers yet off my models, but I wouldn't be surprised if it would be a pretty big play, possibly a 10-star. Because if anybody, any coach in the nation is better prepared in the month of February, other than Jay Wright, I don't know who it is. So I expect them to treat this game as a very important one, you know, not one that, well, it doesn't really matter, it's at a conference. You know, it does matter. And their goal is not just to win the Big East, it's to win the whole thing.
John Ryan, professional handicapper whose work you can find over at bangthebook.com with some NBA market buy and sell, and then also extended week-long looks at the Big East and the Big Ten. You can follow John on Twitter at John Ryan Sports and the number one. John, what are people going to find on your Twitter page, man?
Oh, all kinds of stuff, Adam. I put up team trends for specific games every day. You'll have some free betting systems that you know, hit 65% and sometimes higher that I think are worthwhile. And then you have an opportunity to subscribe to the premium plays, which I'm able to get pretty cheaply because it's on Twitter. Last week, I wanted to thank everyone who signed up for the 5-day free trial. And we'll have to try that again sometime in the future. And the reason I'm not doing it this week is because there was such a great response that I truly didn't have a way of organizing all the admin work with emails and names. And it just became a pretty fun task to do. Fun being that, you know, I was in demand there for a little bit. So I think for the week, the 5 days, I think we did make a bit of a profit. Obviously, the 10-star and the Sixers was the feature play of the 5 days. But I really thank people for, you know, giving it a shot and a test drive, and it does mean a lot to me.
Well, definitely make sure you follow John on Twitter at John Ryan Sports and the number one, and check out his work over at bangthebook.com. John, always a pleasure, man. Thank you so much for joining me, and we'll talk to you again next week.
My pleasure, Adam. Take care.
There you go. There's John Ryan. Once again, professional handicapper. You can find his written work over at bangthebook.com, and also follow him on Twitter at John Ryan Sports and the number one. Coming up on our Friday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll chat with Greg Peterson of VSiN and the Hoopin' with Hoops podcast. We'll take an extended look at the Saturday college basketball card, and then I'll also give you some of my thoughts for this weekend in college basketball and the NHL, with a little bit of a shorter segment to wrap up this week on the show. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.